Okay, good evening, everybody. We're actually starting according to our nuclear clock a minute early or so. And I have nothing, I don't know what to say.
You've got to fill the extra minute.
I have to fill the extra minute, he's saying.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, good evening. Mm. It's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock on the west coast of California. And we're working our way through The Life in the Labyrinth, a book by E.J. Gold. I doubt you can see the title from that distance, and my arms are too short, but take it from me that that is what we are doing. And the chapter we're on is actually chapter 13. Maybe one of the more stirring chapters of all in the books that we've read so far. We've worked our way a couple of times through practical work on self, to the human biological machine as a transformational apparatus. We've worked our way through the joy of sacrifice. And in a certain way, it's as if all of that culminates in this chapter. And does that make some, that should make some sense to you? Because as we get into it, you're going to see what it is that we've been working to understand about words like awakening the machine and the fact that we can do that. Now, the depth of why and some of the import of why we do that and why it can be important, not just for our little, you know, headless egos running around, oh, good, look at me, but maybe there's another purpose. Now, Ivan, what's the title of this particular chapter again?
This chapter is called The Initiation of the Absolute.
Okay, so called The Initiation of the Absolute. Now, we actually, this is the second part of this particular chapter. We're going to rewind just a little bit. We're going to start this book page, this is the new edition. We're going to start on page 149, and the beginning of the paragraph we're going to start on is called, How Can the Absolute Hope to Encourage? Like you can see,
yeah, I found it.
You see it, what page is it on?
It's on 132. And this is
132 in the old edition. So I'm going to get started. There's a lot to cover. We could spend two more weeks on the rest of this chapter. It's
probably
that important. But let's go. How can the absolute hope to encourage the creation of its own will to life? This, in technical terms, is called, but only on the highest macro-dimensional level, from the absolute to the creation, the invitation. So part of what we're talking about here is not just demanding, in a sense, that there be an awakening, but we're coaxing it, we're asking, we're inviting. Can you stand in the place of invitation? Can you, think of that for a minute. Think of standing in invitation. As you're doing that, you're not, I've often wondered, you know, what would true prayer be like? And because a lot of the prayer, starting from like Reverend Ike in the 70s down in Los Angeles, he says, pray for your treasures in heaven now. Pray for a Cadillac. Get a Cadillac. Well, okay, we know, okay, that's wrong. But then, you know, a lot of practitioners would pray for the health of their cat. Or they'll pray so that they get the job they're hoping for. It's the same thing. Or they'll pray for this or that. Or a lot of the monks will pray because it's important to pray and they're doing the work of the church. Mm-hmm. All of it is itself, eventually, it's somewhere. Well, how do you do that? Just standing in the place of invitation. That's a very difficult place to stand. Anyway, so let's proceed. Now, the secret of the invitation is well kept, given only by initiation, It is soundless, undetectable by word or deed. It has no gesture, no visible prompting, yet the invitation is clear, clear to awaken, to come to life. Okay, first of all, thing that's remarkably unusual, Ivan, is that here the author is telling us, here's the secret.
Yeah, right.
Here, he's saying, here's the secret. And this is a case where, in fact, the secret keeps itself. Because we have to slow down enough to get a sense of what that secret is and to stand with it. And I like the word acquiescence or surrender at this point. So we can get ourselves in a position of the right vibratory sensation. And then just to be in that with no hope, no want, and no desire. Silverdale, I think, might be on the phone. And in that space called, you call it the higher vibratory sensation. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, so when we're in the higher vibratory sensation, what if we can just hold ourselves in that space for no reason other than that's the work we're doing at the moment? That is our work. Okay? jumping ahead just a little bit. The machine has a will of its own, and because the creation is related by corresponding to the machine, is related by corresponding to the machine, we know that it must also have a will of its own, equally powerful and unbreakable, like the human biological machine. Also seeks the dark, lethargic sleep of forgetfulness, the touch of Lethe. And this Lethe is the river of forgetting, and one of the four rivers in the underworld. And in this one, you drink from the river and you forget the past. And then you can become reborn. But that is not what we're seeking. We are not seeking that. And I'm going to jump ahead a few paragraphs. two more paragraphs. The Absolute is dependent on the shamanic voyager, an individualized, consciously functioning fraction of itself for this service. So this idea of awakening our machine, when we awaken the machine and there's a pause of the will of the machine, of the human biological machine coming forth, the essential self comes to flower. Now that's the first part of it. And when we work in the human biological machine, we started to get a sense of this, the human biological machine as a transformational apparatus. Silverdale, do you remember those chapters when we were working on HBM?
I don't know. You'll have to give me some more clues.
Okay. When we were talking, when the first part of it is we awaken the machine. How do we awaken the machine again? Is we actually place our attention, our essential attention on it, and then there's an awakening in a sense. And the essential self, as it starts to grow, it invites the human biological machine back. And the human biological machine is attracted to the essential self. Do you remember this part? Am I saying it about right?
Yeah, absolutely. Within ourselves is a crystal clear vibratory sensation. It's just we're not aware of it because it's been covered over by the dominant machine itself, together with the historical personality. And I think what we discover in the course of transformation, self-initiated transformational evolution, is that as we begin to just kind of pacify the totality of our negative behavior, that we're gradually become aware of this vibratory sensation. It's very faint and distant to begin with, but over time it becomes a seemingly a fully functional part of ourselves, and then the human biological machine and our essential self begin to work together in a reciprocal mutual initiation.
There's a reciprocity that occurs after we get to that level. We understand that. I made a note, just to rewind a little bit. What, you know, for yourself, and if you'd like to, you can go on the website wingsofchaos.com and notate, what does the invitation mean to you? But you have to discover that, and you discover it in silence and stillness, which we'll get to toward the end of the chapter. But I'm continuing where we were and jumping ahead. How ironic, this reversal of the Prometheus problem. What do you take that to mean, Ivan? So
yeah.
When we studied Prometheus before, in a few chapters before, Prometheus was giving and bringing the fire to mankind.
So basically something from the higher to the lower.
Something.
And this is reversing. This is bringing from the human dimension, from the lower, up to the macro, you know, up to the macro dimensions, all the way up to the top.
So the why is, how could we possibly be of any help to the Absolute?
The
Absolute is the big guy. It's the Absolute is God. I mean, like, we're just what? But nevertheless, that's the challenge of this book, and the really the startling, in my opinion, the startling issue in this chapter. It's startling.
Well, it says in several different ways that each one of us is a fragment. There's a part of that entity or a part of that dimension or, you know, something lost from that dimension, let's say.
Susan, are you on tonight?
I am on, and there are a couple comments.
Please.
Simon is saying, to me, invitation begins. Wait, they're typing so fast. I have to go back. To me, invitation begins with a sense of duty inside.
Can't hear you.
To me, invitation begins with a sense of duty inside and an urge to waken up the machine in that moment.
Okay.
Can you hear me better? And then Ora is saying, he brought the fire to us, but in this case, the higher needs something from the lower levels up to the higher.
Okay, so the machine is asleep. And for some reason, and I underline that clause, for some reason, we are moved to start working towards awakening the machine. And then we do. Whether you know this work or not doesn't matter to me. What does matter to me is that I look around and I see people all over the place trying to find whatever way they can to be in this space called waking up. They don't do it often enough, but I just look around, I can see people to go. They like to go fish. Well, they don't like to go fish because they like to catch the fish, but the ritual of standing near the river or the lake and being in the meditative space that it is. So, but this particular work, we call it for the more experienced, the voyager, the shamanic voyager, and that's what we're talking about here. Prometheus, then, he brought the fire, but now, as we awaken, we see, hey, there's something more. There's a duty here, a duty called for. If we are, in fact, a speck of the Godhead that has manifested on this plane, then we can sense the urge, in a sense. There's a sense to reunite, right? Like there's an urging, a nostalgia, strange nostalgia, to get back to something. So if we can envelop ourselves in that sensation and hold it, that's something that we can do on our little square foot of holy ground. No one can stand before the Absolute without experiencing total annihilation. Yet, we must find a way to make the Absolute aware of creation, but in the fullest possible detail the totality of all potential attention. This is where I was trying to get the, it was this clause, Ivan, why I wanted to get the Paradiso from Dante.
Oh, okay.
Right. Because when you start, there are, if I remember correctly, there are 10 cantos in Paradiso, and towards the end, as Dante is moving into the Imperium, there's less and less and less that he recognizes. And of course, in the Imperium, in order to save him, in a sense, all that he can see is the divine rose. Otherwise, he would be absorbed and be no more. But so the absolute is aware of creation, painfully aware. It is a fact. It's there, but it's dead, horrible, unconfrontable, a rotting corpse. Yet, what else is there to love, to keep company in the emptiness of the void? This should begin to throw light in the great work, and why communication in the absolute is both necessary and difficult. The absolute can't derive answers. It doesn't know where to look. It has no reference library. We are the reference library. What can this mean? Well, how can we be the reference library? Is Piangio, I don't know if Piangio's there this evening.
Piangio, it looks like he's on, but having some trouble with his computer.
Okay, okay. How
there are
can
a couple
we...
comments before
Go
you get
it.
Too far along.
Yeah.
Okay, so Becky Sunnybrook is saying, if we're only a fraction of the absolute, why is it we consider ourselves that way? How can
it be?
If we're only... Yeah, how can a speck help anyone, let alone a huge absoluteness?
Okay, good point. Let's remember that question. It does get answered. Go ahead.
Lost Horizon says, back to Becky, the only answer that comes to mind is similarity and resonance, not scale. And,
is that it?
Well, I just, Sinhog added that each penny deposited in the piggy bank is of some small help.
Good, exactly, Sinhog. And that's my answer, too. I put it slightly differently, though. And that's, I mean, let's say that one person begins to awaken. And Becky, at that point, let's say a little teeny, like one of those little lights on a Christmas tree, you know, you get the one, the little teeny ones, and it's just like a white little light, and it's the only light that's on. And then further up this string on the tree, one other light comes on. And then closer to the first light, another light comes on.
Mm-hmm.
And the first light then knows and senses that that second one has come on. And so on and so forth. We are in a lonely work here. But it nevertheless is a worthy work, and it has not died out over the thousands and tens of thousands of years of mankind. It continues. So, we are the reference library. Don't know the answer to that one. We, as part of the creation, can perform the basic and practical research and communicate the results of our research to the absolute. Note this next phrase, by performance of the awakening process. Does this help Becky a little bit? Attention is beyond scale, and the attention of the shamanic voyager is equally effective in the macro dimensions.
See, there's a statement that seems like to go against the other point about the absolute is that attention is beyond scale. So because you talked a little earlier about detail, you know, this idea of what can the small spark or the fragment do? Well, you know, he has this phrase, but in the fullest possible detail. You know, there's, you know, I get the feeling from these, from what he's saying here, that like he's sort of working around something, but it's that there's something that only this small fragment can do.
Yeah.
Something the totality can't do as a totality. because of the scale of the absolute. I think he uses the word scale. You know, the dwelling place, let's say, the where the dimension, the macro dimension or the plane or the level or whatever it is on which the absolute exists, let's say, beyond the creation, is not dealing with details. It doesn't have to do with bringing alive or bringing awake or bringing to awareness, let's say, anything detailed.
In the some of the Indian cosmology, the Brahma was asleep on the infinite lily pad and then decided to manifest.
Okay.
And here was all of creation then. And every 4,000 cycles or whatever the heck that is, draws himself back in.
Right.
You know? And it's, but as soon as the manifestation takes place, and this is, Pianjo and I, we've talked, of course, about the Tree of Life, where there's a manifestation takes place. But once that occurs, it's there.
Right.
It's like you can't go back on it until something happens. And that something has to do with these little bitty lights waking up.
And
okay.
So Pianjo did make it, and he
okay,
has,
good.
And his comment, he says, it seems not just a nostalgia to return, but to keep the animal and the angel in contact to create being, which cannot exist without work.
Want to say that again?
Nice.
About the animal and the angel?
Nice.
Yeah, I'll read it again. It seems not just a nostalgia to return, but to keep the animal and the angel in contact to create being, which cannot exist without work.
So the animal and the angel work together, and you've said this many times, Silverdale, and then it creates the being. So that's what we can do. These are not theories that are so far beyond us that we can't understand. We've all worked to the idea of what it means to begin to awaken a little, just a little bit. And it's the little bit that we have to offer. So take that little bit and awaken and awaken and awaken. But it's having an effect. Because if you are in that part of your vibratory body, and for some reason you go to pick up your dry cleaning, and you're standing there, and the person on the other side, and you, for some reason, at that moment, remember to awaken the machine, and you're in that vibratory sense, guess what? You've left a little emanation there.
A contagion.
It's a contagion.
Yeah.
And one of the little lights just kind of goes on for a moment. So can we do something? Absolutely. And so when can we do it?
Now.
Right
now. Yeah, why not? If not now, when? That's a good question.
The absolute is suffering in an unknowable way, unknowable until we experience it in the place of the absolute, possibly only for a daring and courageous voyage and shaman. And Simon, this should bring to mind some of the writings of Castaneda. The human primate, who has always been just one faceless part of an enormous swarming herd, can't know what real loneliness is. But we who are labyrinth voyagers can leave the herd and feel its full-blown intensity. And this is part of why there's a fear of awakening, is you begin to sense that coldness of the absolute on your back, and you just, you can't, you just don't want to be there. You can't be there. This sense of loneliness is staggering. But then you come back for a moment and you realize, hey, maybe there's something I can do. And we can just be together for a moment, Ivan. Nice. From time to time, it may relax its anxiety and dread. It's anxiety and dread washed away for the moment as creation comes to life. And in this moment of companionship, its fear and longing for some form of parental soothing may be relieved. It may seem like a clumsy anthropomorphic way of describing the absolute, but really everything in this higher dimension and beyond in the absolute is, except for scale, very similar to what we are involved in, very similar to what we go through every day. It's not the form that's disturbing, but deeper things, things not visible or evident to the inattentive. So it is disturbing to begin sensing the corpse in a way, to sense that, and to sense the dread of this deafness that surrounds us. But I say, and this is me, and this is my slant on things, is it also is a moment of hope when you can see that, even though you know there's only one small bell you can ring. I say ring that bell, and the bell can begin and create the concert. Jumping ahead about three paragraphs then.
Can I add a comment?
Please, yeah.
From Mark Roach.
Good.
He says, quote, "The level to see means the level of light, the level of light in infinite extension."
Okay.
Light.
Good.
We're all of us not just bonded to each other, but we're actually one thing. Quoted by E.J. Gold, what that means to me is that we can affect the bigger because ultimately we are it.
There it is in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. She got it. Good one. Now,
and I guess,
go ahead.
I'll throw one more in from Pianjo. We don't have to do anything in particular, just keep our awareness of our essence and our machine together in the moment.
Okay. So, what is a heroic act? What then is a heroic act? In light of that, both your comment, Susan, and what Pianjo is saying.
Well, actually, that other comment was from Mark Roach.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But to me, as far as being a hero, would be to do all that you possibly can and then a little more, to expand or be open to.
And to just to be and rest in our attention and presence. If we go to attention and presence rather than the external, something can happen. And then this next thing I'm going to read is, if we lock ourselves in a room in which nothing happens except we get fed three times a day, the most important event upon which we will tend to focus all of our attention will be meal times. When we're not eating, thinking about eating, preparing to eat, comparing our present meal with the last meal, So, what's exciting between the moments of those meals? That's what I ask. Mm. There you are in your cell, and all you can think of is, well, that was a great breakfast, and 3 minutes later you're thinking, I wonder what's for lunch. What bread and water are for lunch today? But does nothing happen between those external moments, those external activities? And the answer is yes. Go to a restaurant sometime when you're going to meet a friend or something, and instead of you sit down and let's say you're 5 minutes early, and instead of pulling out your book, or as you want now, you pull out your iPhones and start instead of checking your email, what if you sat there for 5 minutes? The thunder of the vibratory sensations would be so exciting. That's what we can do. Okay, so jumping ahead a little bit, how can the absolute avoid the magnetic seduction of sleep, which we call the creation? since it finds itself entrapped every time. The fact is, it's up to us to extricate the absolute. And that can only be by evolution, which becomes the, with encouraging the creation to bring itself to life and the self-initiation. This is the invitation once again, where, and the same with us, the same with us. What if you're sitting there in presence and attention and you invite the machine forward? You invite the machine. You just kind of wait for it to come forth too. You wait for it to come forward and you begin the dance of this self-initiatory play between the great power of the machine and the delicacy of presence and attention that the essential self brings us. I thought we could expand on that a lot, like what it means to extract the absolute. And if anybody would like to write on that, that'd be a great topic on the site, Wings of Chaos. It's our task. Go ahead, Susan.
Okay, I have a comment from Becky. She says, it seems that the only absolute anyone can know is their own self.
Yes.
That is really all it boils down to. No matter what others are doing or feeling, you need to have your own realization of being absolute in yourself alone.
Once we, and commenting on what Becky said, is once we can sense and understand the quality of attention that we can be in, attention and presence. And I love this term that Silverdale has used, this higher vibratory sensation. Once you start to become comfortable being there, then you can, at that point, you can begin looking around, Becky, and saying, oh, is that a fellow traveler? Mm-hmm. Then you can begin maybe to see someone else on the path, in the mountain, looking also where your eyes are pointed as well. Okay? Should I go on?
Yes, it seems like it's...
Okay.
You should go on.
It's our task to somehow, in some unimaginable, inexpressible language of communication by suggestion, by example, entice the absolute to place its full and profound totality of attention on the creation with the fullest possible intensity. Okay, so how do we play that role? It's up to us? That's ridiculous. I mean, I can barely hold down a job. I don't have enough money to pay my bills. My car needs repairs. I'm sick. You know, I need to do something to change my relationship. Da 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 da. How? I don't have time for the absolute. That's funny. It's on its own.
Yeah, really.
Well, yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's our task to entice the absolute to place its full and profound attention on creation. As we perform the action within the labyrinth, it occurs correspondingly in the highest. As the labyrinth, the center is the circumference, the macrocosm and the microcosm, seed and tree. Okay, so there we, Becky, I'm not sure if that answers your question in part, but this is, there's the science of correspondence, you know, as above, so below. As below, so above.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're being introduced to here. That's what's partly so radical about these writings by E.J. Gold. It's very unique. This is like the next generation of material that's out there. So as below, so above. And what is it? You know, I'm remembering something from the Lord's Prayer right now, and I'm drawing a blank.
Earth as it is in heaven?
Yes, earth as it is in heaven.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a slant to that. We usually say, oh, we should make earth like it is in heaven. Uh-uh. We are creating as it is in heaven. Make sense?
Becky did respond.
Okay, Becky.
She said, what you described, David, was being in a cell, locked up. That is having to stay there with yourself.
Yes.
Your other description was having the choice, sitting in a nice restaurant. What is the difference in yourself in these two places?
None. If I read that right, is what's the difference in selfness? Actually, none. It's just not as easy to roll that out. I mean, this is exactly something that happened to me this morning. So I was meeting a friend for breakfast, and I was there a little early, and I just experimented with that. It's different, and there's a certain boldness to it, because my machine wanted to be the one that took over.
Mm-hmm.
It's the machine. Oh, I'll make small talk with the waiter, or I'll read this book, or here's a little newspaper, I'll read that. Those were acceptable things. Just sitting there in presence wasn't acceptable. So says my machine, but it wasn't the boss at the moment. And it was fun. That's all I can say. It was fun. There's less pull when you're in your own solitude in a certain way. There's less pull from the machine. The human biological machine has less force. You can penetrate maybe more deeply. But the heart of the core, the vibratory sensation, it's the same. So Molly has a question. One of the things that Molly is saying then is she's bringing out that when you're in those public spaces, it takes a certain type of skill to weave your way into presence. And the skill is the constant dance of the machine. So that's a good comment there. So it's finding... And as we get there, more people will come to us because we are a magnet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm jumping ahead. Now imagine being a tiny little ant trying to get the attention of a human because you know something that the human didn't know that would be of great benefit to the human. If only the human would pay attention to the little ant. You can't speak the human's language. You haven't got the equipment and with which to communicate to the human on the human level. You only have the equipment of an ant. I'm not going to read the story there. But
yeah.
But still, that's a good way of putting it. In a certain way, we're so insignificant. But if, and of course there's faith involved here, faith of understanding and keeping these principles, this idea of as above, so below, and as below, so above.
Mm-hmm.
If those make sense to you, then work with that. Maybe we don't know how we can know whether it has an effect, but it may have an effect. So Go ahead.
I'm just thinking there again, it's, we're in this area of sensing that I think that what EJ sort of suggests here and there again is that there is a sensation that goes along with having an effect. There is a perception or a,
does this make
an
sense?
Atmosphere or a feeling that you would have. And, you know,
does this make sense to you that what Ivan is saying then? Do you believe, and Pianjo, for some reason, you're coming up, does this make sense that when you feel you're having, when you are having an effect, that you have a sensation of having an effect?
Yeah.
Silverdale, are you going to weigh in on that one?
Well, I'll tell you the way I see this is all of us, without exception, share a common essential self. There is, it is the basis for the unity of everything existing. Now, what we individually try to do is bring our own personal creation of human biological machine to life, to awaken it for purposes of personal transformation. But then anybody we lay our eyes upon, also we come to recognize, oh, they have an essential self in them too. And can I use the absolute of my essential self to awaken the essential self within them, within that other biological machine, and awaken them, and in that process communicate something not by word or deed, but by sensing and feeling, which of course is first self-initiated within ourselves.
Yeah. So let's underline that: communicating without word or deed, but nevertheless. Communication. There was an experience where there was a certain invocation going on, and let's just say that the vibratory level was pretty warm, okay? It was pretty hot. And for some reason in that particular moment, EJ reached out his hand like this, and I also respond with my hand like this, and just palm the palm like this, Ivan, you know, like this.
Yeah.
Okay, just stay there for a second. See that?
Yeah. There's a sensation, if that's what you mean.
Okay. And there was a definitive sensation, as there was right now. And on reflection, and we can even reflect on this moment, on reflection, there was meaning to it. I don't know what the meaning was, and I don't want to try to know it here, linearly in my brain, but it was filled with meaning. Okay? Thank you. That was a great, thank you, Silverdale.
Well, I'll tell you, David, along those lines again, that the terror of the situation is when we see how hard it is to awaken our own personal biological machine, the dead creation of ourself, we then realize how even more challenging it is to awaken somebody else. I mean, one of the things that I think we all appreciate about EJ is he has the capacity to do that, even if we don't quite know exactly what he's doing or how he's doing it. Maybe he himself doesn't know how he does it, but that's how I explain that phenomenon.
It happens. And that's like we've always talked about this idea of the tuning fork.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you
that's
knock
right.
the tuning fork, and then the string on the guitar vibrates.
Yeah, it's a sympathetic vibration. Yeah, I think that we're passing by here that this is like, you know, what David was saying, there's a distinct sensation, right? Is that
yes.
what you're saying, like with
yes.
your hand? And you know, you're saying that it means something. There's a meaning. It feels meaningful, or
yes.
it's like something is happening, but that's not significance. It's like it has, you know, it has content, or it has force or effect, or there's electrical energy. But you know, this is all beyond rationality.
Yes.
I think that it's not, since it's not mental. You know, we're in the area of, we're not so much in the area of science. I think that a lot of these scientific explanations of EJs are by way of an analogy or a metaphor, the electrical fields around the body and so on and so forth, and the sympathetic vibrations and all this kind of thing. But it's the principles like the correspondences, as below, so above. It's during the realm of magical processes more than like physics or chemistry or biological processes. Starting to talk about something that is still, you could think of it as science, but it's...
Until physics catches up with it.
Well, it's like, he's talking about shamanism, so it's like shamanistic.
It is shamanistic.
Ritual,
it is magical.
Magic, yeah.
And I think Becky, that every once in a while, not only do we wake up, but we notice maybe there's someone else on the path. There is an absolute uniqueness about our own inner sensation. But then sometimes you're surprised. You're surprised to see somebody that, hey, that I know that person.
Mm-hmm.
But you know them from inside. We employ imagery and fantasy.
Can I throw a comment in before we get off this?
Yes, please. Comment.
Yeah, because it's to me being contact seems really important. Piangio is saying that when our essence contacts another essence, there's a tangible sensation.
Yes.
And then Jim is saying looking directly into someone's eyes when both are open also causes being contact.
Yes.
And that,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I have a feeling like when you're with somebody, your vibrations kind of meet. And so I always try to shoot for the higher vibration.
Wait a minute. What did you just say?
Well, I think when you have beings coming together, and they're all vibrating at a different level.
Yes.
To be in the same space, you have to reach some sort of collective vibration.
What was the phrase that she used, Ivan? Did you hear it? I shoot for the higher
vibration.
Yeah. How, Miss Susan, do you do that? How do you navigate to the higher vibration?
Well, it's really easy to get sucked into the lower when somebody's complaining about, you know, their job, their life. And I think that's what happens in, you know, general interactions. And I think if you're at the point where you're vibrating at a higher level, it's like you almost have to be strong.
In the higher vibratory sensation. It doesn't mean, and Jim was saying, you look somebody in the eye, that there are a number of people that I have phone conversations with, and I can guarantee you that those individuals have the skill that Molly was telling us about earlier to navigate and shoot for the higher dimension, higher vibratory principle, when we're on the phone together. There, and for me, part of that is the willingness to go. Okay? There's a willingness. The ancient shaman from Sumer and Babylon understood the principle of what role that we as humans play. And it had attained firsthand knowledge that the creation is an involuntary effect, that the existence of the creation was not for the benefit of human primates. They understand also that the absolute is the all-pervading living spirit, which is caught up in its own voluntary creation.
Involuntary.
And when you think of like the Native American tribes, you know, they always say that, you know, they see the spirit in the bird or the spirit in the trees, and they saw below the surface. They were sensing the absolute vibratory sensation directly. That's the beauty that we're drawn to that. And then he goes on to say that it was in all of the traditions at the highest levels found this. It's the practice, the difference. The shaman learned how to produce a long-term change on the creation itself. The shaman learned how to produce a long-term change on the creation itself, which without this change would remain fixed, crystallized. This thing they learned we now call binding in the kingdom. What change is possible within a fixed and crystallized creation? No change is possible where time and space are not, which is to say, in a pure mathematical causality. Yet binding in the kingdom is a shamanic fact, which is what is bound in the lower dimension has an effect in the macro dimension. Now, listen here. The concept of the great work originated as far back as Babylon and Sumer. The idea of helping the absolute to accomplish something, the definition of which is the province of this volume to verify. Okay? So this is the great work, is this, that the shaman can help. The definition is the absolute can be helped. The idea of helping the absolute. What can a voyager who arises from the human primate do to help a being who is not in time and space, has no time and space, has life, such as it is, in one single breath, and whose every breath produces a new, but not different, cycle of creation? And now, a definitive change of being is possible for us. A definitive change, a fundamental change of being is possible. And if we are capable of evolution, then it must also be possible for the absolute. Imagine what this hope must mean into an unchanging, eternal, involuntary creation confronted with a lifeless corpse upon which it must eternally fix its gaze. Its pain must be all the more because for a while, for a moment or two, the creation has sometimes come to life. And we as individual voyagers and shamans, we know that. That's the nostalgia. We have reached those peaks, those wonderful peaks of the highest that we've ever lived, in a sense. Well, they don't go away. The fact that you're not having it during regular times doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's always there. And we can remind ourselves to get back to it. Now, the closing poem is important to read. And Ivan, I was wondering if you would be willing to read that for us.
Sure. The speed of light. Love is the speed of light. The absolute is love. The absolute is the speed of light. The speed of light is stillness and silence. The absolute is stillness and silence. Love is stillness and silence. Where is stillness? Between motion. Where is silence? Between sound. Where is the absolute? Between motion and sound. Silence between every sound. Stillness between every motion.
At this moment, draw your breath and be in silence. Let the silence descend. That in stillness, there. And there within is stillness and silence and stillness. And there in the crevices rests the absolute, awaiting, awaiting, awaiting. And we can respond. When I think of love in this way, and I think of the love descending, the grace that comes forward, that's when I feel the handshake. That's when I know that there's been an effect. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a descent of grace, and I'm just imbued with this love. And that's what we have the opportunity to do. We have the opportunity at any place that we go to seek the stillness and silence, to seek it, and just to rest in that place. Because that is our home. How are we doing, Susan?
Haven't had any comments in a while.
Okay.
I think we're all just still.
So, Pianja, what do
although,
you call
although,
this invocation? Go ahead, Susan.
Aura did say that the space seems to crackle a bit with electric blue light when seen from that stillness and silence, then softens to a violet glow.
Once again, I say, mark this space, and we can find our way back to this space. Sometimes when we're together, but also when we're on our own, find this space. There you go.
Very nice space that we've
created. It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Molly's saying we still have 5 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
And Pianja is saying this invocation is the sweet spot.
That's right, buddy. Sometimes there's nothing to do. There's
I read the wrong thing.
What there is to be. That's the difference. And sometimes it's the most exciting moment is just to be in that space.
So I do have a comment from Molly. They told me to read the comment and I read the 5 minutes. But the real comment...
Go ahead.
Okay. Is coming. Or if you do not turn away, keep that thought going. To identify with the clear, luminous night, light and teaching within the eyes of those whose hurt is blazing from their eyes. For they are clear light and are reaching for the clear light within you no matter what it seems like.
Nice. And the poets emerge and paint our pictures.
Very good.
So maybe that's all we have for this evening, and that might be a good place for us to close this session off, Ivan. And next week, we enter into chapter 14. It's called The Labyrinth Voyager's Quatrain. So we'll discover what that is next week, next Wednesday, at 7 o'clock. Thanks for coming. I look forward to seeing you next week. Good night.
Good night.